Hi, I'm Jason.
Hi, Jason.
So my name is Jason Himmelstein. I am a Microsoft MVP. I was a SharePoint MVP for years, and then they changed our classifications around. I think we're Office Servers and Services MVPs now. I am a Rackspace employee. I run the advisory services team for Office 365, but I've done SharePoint on-prem for years. Been doing Office 365 for quite a while. I occasionally blog. I do tweet. That's my Twitter handle. That's an L, not a 1. It's SharePoint Elhorn. Moved back to Texas about a year and a half ago, and even though I'm sweltering in the heat, I still love being back. And but since we're in Atlanta, I'm a Jaguars fan, so you can pity me. It's okay. We're terrible, but I'm still a fan. So.
And nice shot there of you sitting outside.
Yes, that's my house. That's my new house in Texas. No, that's
real estate market's really crazy in Texas. I don't know if you've.
No, I had the opportunity. Rackspace sent me down to Australia, and so I popped over for the weekend and went to Hobbiton over in New Zealand, and that is me in front of a hobbit hole. So.
Yeah. And this is me trying. There we go. So, how many of you have been to a session that I've done before? You folks are ridiculous. So you will notice, so let's look back. So look at Jason's vanity slide. That is a work of art. That should be printed and hanging above somebody's fireplace somewhere. That is a nice. So you guys have seen my vanity slides before. So we put this deck together, and he comes up with that, and I've got my little, thing I made in Notepad. So I tried to create one here that was equally as impressive and failed miserably. But that's me.
All credit to John White for putting that slide together for me, because I never would have been able to put something that pretty together.
So that's who I should have gone to, John White.
Yes.
So I'm Todd Clint. I'm also a SharePoint or Office Services or whatever MVP. Do some speaking, writing, also work at Rackspace. I have a blog at toddclint.com. I am on Twitter at toddclint.com. Instagram, toddclint.com. I have no originality whatsoever. It's all that. And then I do a podcast. I didn't do it yesterday, but I do it Mondays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Central. Do a live SharePoint podcast. You can go to toddclint.com/netcast. Listen in on that. It's also on YouTube and all those other places. And that Trans Am there is my car. And so if you've ever gone to my blog and seen that emblem, that's actually a Photoshopped picture of my hood. That's that. I use that to drive around, look cool, I'm a big hit in trailer parks. I drive in and it's, big deal there. So we are contractually obligated to put an agenda slide up. And so this is our agenda slide. We're gonna have a short discussion about the difference between upgrades and migrations, because that gets a little confusing. So one of the things that let's do right now, how many of you are already on 2016 and really just here because there's no chairs next door? Few of you, okay.
Couple.
2013.
That's a lot of people.
I would ask more, but that's everybody. 2010. Good
Still
chunk
a lot,
of you.
Yeah.
All right, so here's where it starts getting select. 2007. All right, so there's a support group later tonight at a bar. You guys can get together.
Is there anybody still on 2003? Anybody?
2003, do I see? All right, sir, so we got the record holder here.
He needs a hug, Todd. That man needs a hug.
Yeah, this man needs a hug. And so I got to ask, we covered them all but one. Anybody still running 2001 somewhere? You, sir? He can only name that two. All right, yeah. Okay, so we're going to cover, because we know that there's people on older versions of SharePoint, not everybody's ready to go right to 2016. We've kind of broken some of the SharePoint 2016 specific stuff out a little bit, and then the last three quarters of the deck is going to be for everybody. And that seemed to be the best way. That way we didn't have to go, this works for this, but not for this. So that's kind of what we're going to do. But that is our agenda.
So,
Jason, how do people know if they should upgrade or migrate?
Well, ultimately, everybody's actually migrating at this point, right? There is no such thing as an in-place upgrade at this point from any of the newer. Yeah, good versions, as we call them, of SharePoint. You are always going to be doing some form of migration to the IT pro. To the end user, they're seeing it as an upgrade. They don't really care what's happening on the backside. To them, they're getting upgraded features, and you're doing something to them. Right? You're not doing something for them, you're doing something to them.
Yep.
So this is an upgrade to them, and now it's scary and it's changed, and where's my cheese? That's the usual question. Where did you move my cheese? Where is everything? So we have to keep that in mind, that even though we look at it on the backside as a migration, we're doing it seamlessly, easy, nice, and Everything's been tested, and we've got all of our plans in place. The user still sees it as an upgrade. So when we talk about it, we're gonna say, oh, yeah, we're migrating to this new thing. To them, you're still upgrading the version. So, and then there's the conversation about, well, are we staying on-prem, or are we going into the cloud? Or are we doing both? Are we doing hybrid?
I think everybody's going to do hybrid.
I think everybody's going to ultimately do hybrid at one point or another. So as we're looking at this and we're starting to figure out, we're doing our migration, we're planning everything out, you sit down and you spend your 9 months in advance, because everybody gets plenty of time to do a migration, right?
Yeah, lots of testing and thorough research and
upper planning, right? Lots of resources, big, big farms that mirror everything. I think I'm losing them.
They're all foreign words.
This never happens, does it? Yeah. No, not in reality. So this is an opportunity for us to go through and clean up the sins of the past. Go through, clean up some of the old garbage that's out there. We're being recorded, so I can't say the word I really wanted to say. But go in and clean up the old docs that are there. Go in and clean up the old sites that haven't been touched in years. And then streamline it down before you start to go ahead and look at that migration process and what you're going to move over.
Yeah. So we've all got site collections that have gotten too big. We've all got those monstrous ones that we thought nobody would use, and now they're 100 gig. We've all got a bunch of site collections. There probably should have been one, but we just didn't understand how they were going to grow. So this is a good time to fix some of those sins of the past. And there's kind of two schools of thought on how you should do this, and there's not really a hard and fast rule. There's one school of thought that says when you do your upgrade / migration, it's the only thing you should do. Just get it in place. If you have things that you need to fix, try to fix them before you upgrade. And we're going to talk about some of those aspects later. But get that done before you upgrade, so when you upgrade into your new environment, there's not a lot of fiddling. Your users, they will get spooked when you upgrade the first time, and then if you start changing things after that, they get very afraid. There's another school of thought that says, get it up into the new environment, fix it there, make all the changes. So you just got, your user base better than we do. And what your environment's like and all that. So we're going to kind of let that decision be up to you. But when you're planning this, look at some of those things that you wished you'd done. And this is a good time to do them either before you move, so in preparation to moving to 2016, or as part of your move to 2016. And if you do some of those things, break up site collections, combine site collections, there's no good way out of the box to do that. And so you will probably at some point end up using some third-party tools. And I don't think we hit the third-party tool stuff very hard in this deck. Kind of the message I want to get across about third-party tools is it's not all or nothing. So we're going to go through and talk about a lot of the out-of-the-box opportunities that you have for upgrading database attach, but it's not one or the other. And so you can say, we've got these site collections, they're going to be easy, we're going to move those, we'll do the out-of-the-box database attach, poof, they're good. But these over here are going to require a little more hand-holding, so we're going to use a tool for those. But just understand you've got some options, and you can pick and choose which you use when you do
one of the really nice things from the third-party tools side of things these days is most of the vendors that are out there have some form of a free checker that you can go off and examine your content database. Run it. See what's happening inside of your content database. Figure out what is complex and what is easy. What can I do and what do I need to do some work on? Most of them have a free tool out there that will help you analyze your world and then sell you something. But ultimately, you can use just the free tool, figure it out before you just go spend a whole bunch of money on something that you may actually not need. You could do this, so go check it out.
Yep. All right, so these are things that are exclusive to our friends moving from SharePoint 2013 to SharePoint 2016. The rest of you, feel free to check Twitter, email your moms, do whatever. So one of the first things we need to get out of the way is there is no shortcut from anything prior to 2013 to 2016. There is no magic things or anything like that. So if you're on 2007, like our friend over here, this is your path to 2016 Nirvana. Upgrade 2007 to 2010, upgrade 2010 to 2013, upgrade 2013 to 2016, and then probably end up having a horrible alcohol problem of some variety. There is no shortcuts. Now, a couple of things have gotten better. So how many of you have upgraded from 2010 to 2013? What kind of background? Okay. You guys are going to get really bored in the last half of this deck. How many of you have gone from 2007 to 2010? Okay. All right. So one of the things that really caught us off guard or was a problem in 2007 was you couldn't upgrade 2007 to 2010 unless you were at Service Pack 2 on 2007. And I don't know about you guys, but I saw a lot of 2007 farms that you couldn't put Service Pack 2 on. It was held together with spit and baling wire and just sheer luck. And the idea of putting a patch on that and rebooting anything or looking at it, there was just no way you were going to be able to do that. And so Microsoft kind of fixed that. So now as long as you're at RTM, you can bump to the next version, which is good. But you do have to be at RTM as you bump through. Now, if you're trying to do this, if you want to go from 2010 to 2013, you can just kind of set up a temporary 2013 farm, but you do have to do the 2010 to 2013, 2016. Or our final little suggestion there.
You can buy a tool.
Yeah, so the tools work kind of on the client side. So you can take your 2007 farm and point a tool at that, point it at your brand new 2016 farm, make with the magic, and that's an option also. So that is that path.
So going, man, I haven't talked for that long. You talked for a while there. It was good. I got my throat thing. So going from 2010 to 2013, mostly the same as it always has been. You're doing a database attach at that point. We did a whole bunch of videos that we were going to insert because we didn't know what Wi-Fi was going to be like at the conference and everything. And then we decided that we were going to talk way too much during the course of this thing. So we actually don't have any of those in there. Someone's going to talk too much. So we actually have those that we will post later, but we actually do have a video that we're going to link to at the end of this. What was the name of that guy that you used to present with?
It's inconsequential.
Shane Young?
Yang? Yeah.
So Shane Young from Bold Zebras actually put together a video for us showing how to go from 2013 to 2016 that we'll link to at the end of this. So thank you to Shane for that.
Yeah, because this is kind of like a half day topic, maybe a full day topic. So trying to get you guys to where you're going to be comfortable with upgrade in 75 minutes is just not possible. So we decided instead of spending time doing demos, we'd have the video for you. You can check that out after.
So on the positive side, we're going to walk through all the steps to do it. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about it. We're just not going to do the little video display thing that usually fails when you try and demo at live conferences. Yeah.
Who saw Shane and I do this at TechEd in L.A.? And the demo actually
the one you
failed?
Yeah,
it just failed spectacularly twice. Yeah, I've been scarred for that.
So getting back to the topic, the thing you don't want to do as you're moving is try and copy your 2013 farm topology. Okay, this is where that mineral conversation we were having before the recording started, and especially now that with Feature Pack 1, you will have the opportunity to take advantage of what we affectionately refer to as mini mineral. It's a smaller version of mineral, and go take a look at the blogs that got posted yesterday for more details on that, or go to Bill's session this afternoon to really dig in. We'll talk more about that on our session on Thursday.
Yep.
But you don't want to copy your topology. You're not looking at doing a single web, single app, and single SQL anymore. Right, there are new roles out there that you really want to take a look at and understand before you start doing your migration.
Yeah, so it's really easy to say, in 2013 we had two web front ends, two app servers, that worked, we'll just do that for 2016. Some of the functionality has changed, hardware requirements, that kind of stuff, and we've got these mineral things that we can use to increase stability. So don't take the easy road. Sit down, give it an hour's worth of thought, do some research, look into it.
Custom role. Everybody's heard about custom role at this point. And at the beginning, we were all just, everything's going to go to custom role. We're just going to do that, right? Don't do that. Go off and understand min-role. Min-role is not a bad thing. I was not a believer at the beginning. I am now. And the fact that they just, at Feature Pack 1, are releasing changes to min-role because they listened to us.
Yeah.
Startling, I know, but really, they're listening and they're changing things based upon the feedback that we're giving in user voice.
Yeah.
So if you don't go out to SharePoint.UserVoice.com,
I think so.
Go out and check that out. The other thing is Project Server. How many fans of Project Server in the room?
Project Server, yeah.
Well, that's more than I was expecting.
Yeah.
But
some people just like to raise their hands.
This is true. They thought I was giving candy away.
Yeah.
So Project Server is now baked in. All the bits are there, so we don't have to have a separate farm. We don't have to do separate things. It's all baked in under the covers. It's a different license. You have to pay for it.
Yeah.
But it's there under the hood.
So how many of you have your Project Server as a separate farm? Okay, that's pretty common. And so people did that for a number of reasons. Patching was a big reason, and functionality. So that's going to be one of the things you're going to have to think about when you're doing this. Are you combining these farms? What does that mean? URL space, things like that. But yes, it's built right in.
Yeah. Or they just wanted SharePoint to perform well.
Yes.
And that could have been another reason why they wanted it separate. So.
Okay, so here is a sticker. So we're gonna go into more in depth about how the upgrade process works. But when you went from SharePoint 2010 to SharePoint 2013, you had the ability to leave your SharePoint 2010 site collections in 2010 mode. And you also had the ability in 2013 to create new site collections in 2010 mode. And that was to ease the upgrade process so that your end users didn't get a big jarring thing. You could plan the back end upgrade separate from the front end upgrade and all that. So that was a decent thing. The bad news is those SharePoint 2010 site collections will not upgrade to SharePoint 2016. And SharePoint 2016 hates those site collections so very much, it won't upgrade the entire database if it finds one. So that piece of PowerShell there, you can run that in your 2013 farm, and it will tell you all the site collections that are still in 2010 mode. So that's one of those things you will have to get fixed before you do your upgrade. There's a lot of things the upgrade process can get around. That is not one of them. So you'll need to do that. So the site collections, if you so we're going to talk more about the database attach. In 2016, when you attach the database with PowerShell, SharePoint says, this person's using PowerShell. They clearly know their stuff. We're going to go ahead and upgrade all these site collections for them. We're just going to do the whole thing. So it will do all of it for you unless you give it the skip site collection upgrade parameter. Then it's just going to do the underpinnings, and we'll get into that a little bit later. If you do that database with Central Admin, so you go into Central Admin, add content database, it will not upgrade the site collections on attach.
So per standard, something going through UI is going to make it so that it sort of, we don't know if you know what you're doing fully. So we're going to just make it easy for you. We're not going to do all the upgrade. We're going to let you do that at your pace and do it later. So through PowerShell, we have the ability to do this. Now, there is a caveat to this. When you go do your database attach and you go to do your test SP content database, which is what you're going to do first, we'll talk about that here in a minute, you have to spell the content database name right.
And why are we bringing that up?
Why are we bringing this up? Because
I spent, could have happened.
I spent quite a bit of time fighting with a database that thought that it didn't have permissions. Because the error that it gives you is the user cannot log in to the content database name that you've given.
Does not
which
have
is
access
true.
To. Does not have access.
Does
to,
not yeah. have access. Which is true because it's not there. But if you spell it correctly, everything works. So make sure you spell your content database name right, because after three scotches and three in the morning and you're just angry, you pour a fourth glass of scotch at that point.
Yeah.
So.
And for those of you doing your upgrades, there is a difference between a database called WSS_content_ToddSucks and WSS_content_Todd_sucks, which was
very true.
Which was the thing that he did.
It wasn't quite the name. I used TK instead of Todd.
Yes, for brevity.
Yes.
So when you do this, if you attach with Central Admin or if you attach with PowerShell and do the skip site collection upgrade, SharePoint 2016 will upgrade that site collection. You can either do it with PowerShell, upgrade SP site, and this is the universal, the sign language sign for use PowerShell. Or the first time a site collection administrator hits that site collection in the background, SharePoint will do it for
I'm
you.
I'm going to use this for Central Admin from
yeah,
now
yes,
on.
Yes, exactly.
Because so. That plays well on an audio recording.
Yes.
So.
Those of you just listening to the audio, imagine something hysterical.
It
we just
really
did
fun.
Something incredibly funny.
Everybody laughed. So.
Excel?
Yes. So the new and this is the official JSON acronym. So Excel Services is now replaced by Excel in the Office Online Server On-Prem, or USOP. That needs to become a thing, guys. USOP.
Because he's got the tattoo, it might as well become a thing. Yeah.
Straight across my back.
Yeah. But it's in Gothic print, so it looks really cool. Really tough. Yeah.
So I'm a BI guy. I do a monthly podcast with John White, all talking all about Power BI and all sorts of BI coolness. And we were at another conference when the first round hit for RTM, and the announcement was made about Excel Services being removed, and everybody panicked. And it's not a bad thing. It's really a good thing.
Very good thing.
Because it's now over in the Office Online Server On-Prem, or USOP. And that's where it should be. All the calculations are happening over there, and it's being done the right way. We still have almost all of the same goodness. There are a couple things that were deprecated. But now that's not there. So we'll talk more about that here in a little bit.
Yeah, and I loved USOP's fables.
Yes, I agree.
Very good. Good stuff.
Yeah, that's how I fall asleep at night.
So the good thing that comes from that Excel thing is if you had Excel services and you wanted to use those web parts, but they also had the Office web apps, you had to choose who did what that's the big thing. That choice is gone now.
Yes. You can, we don't get to talk about WAPI bindings anymore, which is just sad.
Oh, this is a good one. So one of the things that has come out recently for SharePoint, both 2016 and 2013, is the cloud search. Jason and I have been doing the SharePoint thing long enough, and you guys probably have too, that we remember 5 or 6 years ago when Microsoft said, hey, everybody, you're going to move everything to the cloud, all of it, go. And they all took off, and they looked behind them, and there was nobody there.
Yeah. All your base server belongs to us. Let's go.
We were kidding. You're going to move some of your stuff to the cloud. And once they made that realization, they started working in some of these hybrid things. And the hybrid search is one of the greatest ones. I love this. And they announced hybrid taxonomy as part of the feature pack, which is kind of cool. Hybrid search is an on-prem search service application. You have on-prem crawling and on-prem administration, so all the fun knobs and levers and stuff that you're used to pulling. But the index and the query role all happens in SharePoint Online. That's good for a couple of reasons. It affects your hardware topology in a good way, because now that huge index file isn't sitting on your query servers and all that. The other great benefit to it is now all of your on-prem content and your SharePoint Online content are in the same index. So when a user does a query, they get them all together and they're all ranked together and they all look the same. It's all one big happy family, which eases these hybrid things. So a couple things about this. You cannot convert an existing search service app to a cloud search service app. So this is something, if you're going to end up doing this when you upgrade to 2016, you want to play with it a little bit first, because what you don't want to do is create an on-prem search service app and then 6 months later realize you want this other one and have to burn it and start a new one. Your users, their queries are happening in SharePoint Online, and so Microsoft requires these users be licensed in SharePoint Online. That seems a reasonable request. Mm-hmm. Much like Jason's battle with SQL, if they are not licensed, when they do a query, they do not get a friendly, helpful error message that says, we have search results for you, but we won't show them to you because you're not licensed. They just get a no search results response.
Now, if you're listening to this 2 years from now and they've changed that, yes, don't blame us. Hopefully, we have it in user voice. Hopefully, that's going to be something, yes, that they fix too. But
yep. So play with that a little bit. Make sure your licensing is good. This is also available for SharePoint 2013. If you are running the August 2015 CU or later, you can use this. And I've got a blog post on how to set that up, walks you through it. Play with it a little bit, get familiar with it. I think we're all going to be using it. The other great thing is once all your stuff's in SharePoint Online, now your on-prem content can start working into Delve and the Office Graph and all those great online-only tools that use Delve or use Office Graph.
So, additionally, as you're looking at the hardware topology, how many of you have additional search servers in your environment just to do all of the cracking and everything like that, right? Not the crawlers, but everything else. You know those? Once you've moved to this, you don't need them anymore.
Yeah, you can put an iTunes server on there or something. Yeah,
you get to lower your server count through this, because all of that is going to be done in the cloud, right? You're going to be crawling on-prem. The indexes are going to live up in the cloud. You're sending all of that data up there to be processed up there, where there are lots and lots and lots of servers. So you don't have to worry about having all of that on-prem, which means no more patching of those boxes.
Aww.
No more worrying about, you know, server, you know, having two columns in order to make sure that everything is right. All of that goes away for you, right? So the other thing to keep in mind with this is this gives us the opportunity to go ahead and stand up a cloud search service application side by side with our on-prem service application, make sure that all of our settings are mirrored across, crawl properly, go off and test before you flip over from your on-prem and then switch over your search center to the new version, see that things are working, be happy with that, make sure that users didn't even notice anything except all of a sudden their data from the cloud is now showing up in their search results, and then you can go decommission everything cleanly. You don't have to worry about a rip and replace situation and do the cross your fingers and pray. This actually is one of those really nice experiences. The last thing on this point is they've brought it back to 2013. How cool is that?
Thanks, Microsoft.
To me, that was one of the big things that came with 2016 was the fact that they're looking at, we're putting this into 2016. What can we backport into 2013 to give a good experience to people who are still there, who aren't quite ready to upgrade on-prem, or are looking at how do I go fully to the cloud? That story really gets better, and they're continuing to look at that. They're continuing, you know, the commitment that they've made is, as we're building new things, we're going to look at it and see, can we bring things back to 2013. Now, they can't do it with everything. The new model changes things a certain amount, so they can't do that to everything, but they are going to try and take a look at everything that they're putting out there to see what they can pull back into 2013. Heck, it may be nothing, but even if they give us only one more thing, I still call it a win. The fact they're thinking about it is pretty huge.
Yep. All right, so that is all of the exclusive SharePoint 2016 stuff. Now let's move on to the stuff that everybody gets to enjoy. All right. So one thing that's universal, since we lost the ability to do an in-place upgrade many versions ago, now no two versions of SharePoint can exist on the same server at the same time. Now, this was a big deal 8 years ago when we would get up on stage and tell you you probably shouldn't virtualize SharePoint. Now, is there anybody who is still installing SharePoint on bare metal boxes? A couple of you? Everybody's virtualizing it. So it's not a big deal now because now all those resources are fungible. So you can pull down a 2013 server and install a 2016 server in the same VM space and all that. But you can't do an in-place upgrade. You have to stand up another farm, move your data over, and all that. We talked about the database versions. They have to be at the SharePoint RTM version. No patches are necessary. They can be upgraded. You will likely need more hardware for a couple of reasons. We have different roles now. If you're on 2010 and you're using the Office web apps, in 2010 those had to be installed on a SharePoint server. In 2013 and 2016 they cannot be installed on a SharePoint server. So even if all the resource things were the same, you would need more servers for that. Workflow is another one. If you're using the new workflow things in 2013 and 2016, Workflow Manager, those have to be on separate servers. So because of some of those things, you're going to need more servers. But SharePoint itself just requires more steam than it did in previous versions. It does more stuff. So
anybody surprised by that?
Yeah.
Anybody? No? One thing to note about this, as we're talking exclusively about SharePoint, I'm going to bring it back to SQL, you know, the pain for most of us who are SharePoint admins. SQL, unlike SharePoint, can live on the same server in a different instance. Do not put it on the same instance.
That is a horrible idea.
Make sure you alias and whatnot. But if you have a nice, massive SQL cluster, you can leverage the same SQL servers, the same SQL always-on environment, and still live in the same space. So we're specifically talking about SharePoint here.
Yep. So,
clicky. I'm gonna leave that with you.
All right. So, we've been hinting around this database attached thing. Let's clear this all up. We can't do an in-place upgrade, so we know we're moving our databases over. Smiling for the picture in the back.
Oops.
So, which databases can we move over? All the content databases, except for the central admin content database. But all of your WSS content, DBs, your My Sites. We're gonna cover that in another slide. All of your content, because if you couldn't move your content over, there's kind of no purpose in all of this, but you can move all your content over. And also your service app databases, you can move those over. And I don't think we have a dedicated slide on that. Nope. Basically, for all of your service apps, the workflow looks like bringing your database over from your 2013 SQL instance to your 2016 SQL instance, restoring it, fixing permissions, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And then on your 2016 farm, doing, you know, new business connectivity services service app dash name dash database name and give it your old database name. And when SharePoint creates that new service app, it looks at that database name and it goes out first, it looks to see if Jason spelled it right. If he did, it upgrades the database for you. If he didn't, it creates a new one, and he's very confused as to where all of his connections went.
Not surprised.
Yeah. But if it sees the database there, it will notice that it's a 2013 database, and it will just upgrade it in place, no muss, no fuss. And in 2016, all your stuff will be there. That is the case for BCS, Managed Metadata, Performance Point. For search, that only works for the admin database, so that's your settings database. You can't upgrade your index and all that. You have to run a full crawl. So search is the index database and the user profile databases. But that's it. Now, another piece of advice, and I think we do call on this later, when you're figuring out what order you're going to do things in, do you think you do your service apps first or last? First. first, yeah, because when you bring your content databases in and you're doing your tests, it's got to know what's out there. There's also a very specific order you want to do those in, and I don't think we have them in the right order on this slide. We should do that. But I will find that, and we'll send that out. But you want to make sure things like, you know, I think you want manage metadata before search or the other way around, but there's some you should fix that.
We did want it to be the first letter, so it's easy to remember. It's BUMPSUS.
Yes.
That was why we did it that way. BUMPSUS, such an easy way to remember. We didn't want to put it in an order that went logically. We just wanted it BUMPSUS.
Yep. So that's, and if you don't see it on here, you can't upgrade it. So for instance, your config.db, you can't upgrade that. And we'll talk a little bit later about why that's not such a big deal, how to get around that.
But My you've sites. Never been able to upgrade a config.db, so that shouldn't be that much of a surprise. So.
When you could do your in-place ones, you could do it.
Yeah, but that's been forever.
For forever. Back up. So OneDrive in My Sites. So here is one of those forks in the road when you're doing your planning as to whether you can or should upgrade your My Sites. So your My Sites are essentially just site collections or just content databases, all that. But when you're figuring this out, you need to ask yourself a couple questions. Are your users really using these? Is there really anything to upgrade there? There may or may not be. The other thing is, if you're at all looking to go to Office 365, one of the hybrid scenarios that's the easiest to implement, and I think Jason and I would agree it's probably the first one you should implement, is OneDrive for Business out in the cloud. And so if you decide that that's the way you want to go, now's a good time to do that, because you don't want to upgrade stuff if you're not going to use it. So what the OneDrive in the cloud looks like is you have your Office 365 tenant. You've already done your identity stuff while your users are synced to Azure AD. And inside of your on-prem SharePoint, when a user goes up and clicks OneDrive, instead of going to your on-prem My Site, they're redirected to their Office 365 My Site out in the cloud. And if that's and that's a it's a great place to start with the hybrid thing. And so that's something you need to look at as you're making this your plans to move forward. For 2016, that comes out of the box. If you're upgrading to 2013, you need Service Pack 1 for that to happen. Obviously, they have to be licensed in Office 365. There's a really good chance, though, that your SharePoint on-prem CALs are really Office 365 CALs that happen to include SharePoint on-prem. So you may already be licensed for that and not realize it.
So a couple of things to note about this. When you're dealing in the OneDrive world, first of all the really good stuff is coming online. All the new sync stuff right out of the gates, that's where you're going to get it first. All of the stuff, anybody have users in the My Sites world that are doing blogs and things like that? That's about as many as I expected. But for those of you who are, all two of you, the Delve People Profile actually gives you a lot more of that in Office 365. So that's really where the cool new stuff is happening. They did a big blog announcement about the People Profile stuff for Delve and for Office 365 profiles yesterday. Lots of stuff happening there. That functionality that we used to get in My Sites is actually moved over into the Delve app in Office 365, and it's such a better experience. So
yeah, and the other thing, we couldn't talk about OneDrive without making the obvious joke about there being many OneDrives.
Many
OneDrives. So we have OneDrive Consumer, which is, you know, OneDrive Consumer. We have OneDrive for Business, which is on-prem, which is the thing that you get when you click OneDrive inside of on-prem SharePoint. And then we have OneDrive for Business that's in Office 365. Right now there are multiple OneDrive clients, sync clients for your PC. That's getting better, but there is
One less drive now.
Yeah, you can get one less OneDrive. So if you're playing with OneDrive and trying to plan this out and you're getting thoroughly confused, that means you understand it. That means you've got it. That means you're getting there. That's a process. There's several steps. Utter total confusion is an important one. I talked about the authentication piece a little bit, very important. We don't have time to hit it today, but I think tomorrow or this afternoon, I forget exactly when, I'm doing a little 20-minute talk at the Rackspace booth to talk about what that authentication piece looks like, so you can get that.
And I talk a little bit about it in my session this afternoon and tomorrow as well.
There you go, many opportunities. The other thing about this is if you decide to do this OneDrive in the cloud thing, the content is not migrated by SharePoint. The content is migrated by you or your end users. So you can show them how to open up Explorer View and lasso things and drag it over. You can use third-party tools. That when you do this, the important thing to keep in mind is that it's just a redirect. So if you move your My Sites up into the cloud, the on-prem My Sites are not removed. they're just not the thing you get when you click the link. So if you have the URL, you can just paste it in the browser and all the stuff's still there. All right, so we've talked about how you can't update your config.db, which is where all your config is at. So here are a few things that you can do to get your settings and document them, things like that. You can do it by hand, and so here's a short list of things you want. Alternate access mappings aren't going to come over. Managed paths are not going to come over. Any solutions, which are just big blobs that are stored in the config.db, they're not going to come over. You can get those with PowerShell, get SP alternate access mapping, get SP managed path. The solutions, Shane has a blog post on how you can get those, but you can do a get solution and pull the binaries out, and PowerShell will just save them as files on your file system, and you can install them in your new farm. Your service application settings, if you're not migrating those, you'll want to get those out. Another one that, your web application settings, so we're talking about recycle bin, workflow settings, anything like that, that you do in central admin, application settings, web applications. One that a lot of people forget is IIS. Anything that you don't do in SharePoint, SharePoint has no idea about. And the ones that really catch people are host headers in IIS. So, you know, you might have portal.company.com and then just company.com and whatever. Those are in IIS. You need to get those out. The other big one is certificates. Your certificates are not going to come over automatically. How many of you are using SSL internally? Look, I want to go by and high-five every one of you guys.
I was going
to
say shame on the rest of them.
Yeah,
but if
yeah,
you're buying something for the ones that are
you
good,
raise your hand.
That's good, too.
So that's just a thing now. We got to do that. And there's a lot of great tools that make that easy. That is also stored in IIS, so you need to do that. Web config changes. There are a few reasons you need to go into the web config for each of your web apps and make some changes. Those are unknown to SharePoint. So one of the things that I do for customers when I do upgrades, I go into the INET pub directory on all my servers, right-click, send a compressed folder, poof, and I just have a folder. And I go into C, programs file, common file, Microsoft shared, yada, 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 right-click, send a compressed folder, and I just back the whole thing up. I can't bring it over, I can't upgrade it, I can't do whatever, but it makes for great documentation. Because we're gonna go into the new farm, something's not gonna work, we're gonna scratch our heads, hopefully we'll be able to pop that zip file open and find that one web config entry that we made 4 years ago that made everything work, or whatever. Cheap insurance, drives are cheap these days, do that. Now, this all sounds very manual, very boring, very tedious if you don't have a college intern or somebody to have do that for you. It doesn't sound like a lot of fun. So we've got some links here to some of our favorite tools. The first one is a TechNet article that has an incredibly long PowerShell script that basically just runs all of the get statements in SharePoint, get SP sites, get SP whatever, but it spits it out into a bunch of files that give you some decent documentation. The second link is a link in TechNet that has an Excel spreadsheet that's just a workbook. So you can go through and just reminds you of all the things you need to check. So that's another good one. Those are both free. Obviously, they're on TechNet. The bottom one is SP.kit. Are any of you guys using that? So that is one of my favorite tools. It is
great
a
tool.
For-pay tool. It's not very expensive, but it does cost you a couple hundred bucks. And it is a tool that you run that interrogates your SharePoint farm. It creates a report. And it does a whole lot more than that. But you can run it against your existing farm and have it do as deep or as shallow of a review if you want. But it will give you a snapshot in time of your farm, listing all of your settings and how many gigabytes everything's taken and all that. And then you can use that as documentation before and after. And the thing that I really like about that one is everybody's got a pointy-headed boss somewhere. We've all got that. And they love graphs and pie charts and colors and all that. This tool makes some beautiful-looking reports that you can send to your bosses.
You can put your own template on it and make it look like it's yours.
Yeah,
make it look like you spent
like you did all the work yourself.
Putting it together.
Yeah.
The other thing I like is that if you're in an environment that changes a lot, so I used to have a lot of devs that I worked with who liked to do things to farms, you can also go off and run this against a dev environment and then diff the two and see what the changes look like. So it's not just a one-time use kind of a tool. You can use it for that. Really nice way of seeing those diffs.
Yeah, and another thing with that is you can, on your production farm, run it once a month and just see how things grow. How many of you know how big your farm grows in a month? Few of you. This is a really easy way to do that. Run it once a month, look at your numbers.
So we used to have this really cool thing called pre-upgrade check.
Single tier.
Yeah, it's gone.
We lost pre-upgrade check. So this was a great tool when you're going from 2007 to 2010 that would just interrogate everything in your 2007 farm and tell you what was going to be a problem. It's all gone now.
But we got something else that, it works. So this whole, test SP content database that I was mentioning earlier, before you go and do an attach, you want to do a test and make sure that things are clean and that everything comes back okay. You do need to go in and set some of these flags. There are other fancy switches that you can use out there as well. But the ones you have to, in the PowerShell, it's test-SP content database. You have to give it the name of your content database. Please spell it correctly.
Turns out that's important.
Yes, and the error messaging not good. Then you have to tell it which web application you're trying to put it in, because if you just try and test the database, but you don't tell it where you're putting it, it doesn't know what you're putting it on. So it really doesn't tell you anything, and it just spits out and asks you where you're going. So you have to give it the URL of the actual web app that you're trying to hit, just the root, and off and running.
Yeah, so some of the fancy switches are good. There's one that will show you the rows of your tables in your database, and that's good for if you've got workflow history tables that are gigantic that you just haven't paid any attention to, it'll show you that. Another thing that it will do is if you find it referencing features or web parts that you have no idea what it is, you know, snowflake.dwp or something like that, and you just don't know what it is, there is a flag for show web ID, and it will show you which web that web part is in, so you can go back and look at the page and figure out what it is. So I highly recommend any PowerShell commandlet that you ever run ever, the very first thing you should do is type help space and then that commandlet. So in this case, help space test SP content database, and it will show you all the parameters. But some of those, we didn't have those in 2010, and they added them in 2013, it's made all
the difference. So there's a little trick to it as well. Number one, when you do that help first, it's gonna ask, can I go out to the internet? If you're in an offline mode, you just say no, not a problem. If you do have internet, you say yes, go get a cup of coffee, let it download everything, and then come back. The thing you wanna do, if you're unsure about a PowerShell commandlet, is type help dash the name of the commandlet, and then dash examples. No better way to see what you're supposed to do with this thing than looking at the examples, and the standard help doesn't show them. So make sure you do that as well to see how you can be using this. Gives you a couple of examples coming right out of it.
Yep. Here are a couple of other notes that we wanted to mention. One of the mistakes that I've made in the past when doing upgrades is not adding managed paths first. So I assume we've all got managed paths. We get sites out of the box for no extra charge, but we can add some later on, /team/collab/whatever. We have two types of managed paths in SharePoint these days. We have a wildcard managed path, which basically tells SharePoint, here be site collections, and you can have multiple site collections, and that's what /sites is. So /sites and an asterisk, you can put them there. The other kind of managed path that we have is an explicit managed path, and that tells SharePoint, here be exactly one site collection. This is important. We're gonna come back to this. This is all good stuff. So if you do not, since you can't upgrade your config database, which is where all these things are stored, create your 2016 farm, get everything ready. You bring over a content database and you attach it. And there's a familiarization, a mating dance that SharePoint does with its new config content database. And one of the things that it does, it says, tell me about the site collections that you have. There's a table in there that has that. So the content database says, I have /teams HR, I have /teams accounting, I have /teams IT. And SharePoint says, okay, got a lot of these /teams site collections, but I don't have a wildcard managed path for that yet. So these must all be explicit managed paths. And so what it will do is every site collection that it adds to your new farm, it will create an explicit managed path for, if it's not in sites or whatever. It does not tell you this. It does not give you any sort of warning. No lightly, sounding chimes go off to alert you something may have gone wrong. And that's kind of to SharePoint's benefit. It does this so it will all work. These sites will all be browsable. But then the next time you go into Central Admin and look at that web app, you're going to see dozens of managed paths. And that's a bad thing, number one, because then anytime you want to create a site collection in that space from there on out, you have to create a new managed path and all that. Nobody wants to do that. But the other thing is there's performance penalties for that, because every request that comes in, SharePoint has to look at that request and say, okay, which part of this long, nasty URL is the web app part? Which part is the managed path part? Which part is the site collection part, so I know which database to go to? Every URL gets evaluated, and the more of these managed paths you have, the longer that process takes. So add your managed paths. If you screw that up, if you forget that part, like somebody on the stage has, no need to point fingers, no need to name names.
We learn by doing.
Yes, we learn by doing. If you dismount that content database, remove all of these site managed paths and add your wildcard and add that database back in, all is good. But you don't want to have to do that. The next thing is always upgrade the database with the root of the web app site collection in it first. So SharePoint creates a lot of virtual directories, you know, underscore layouts and things like that. And there are processes inside of SharePoint that kind of take shortcuts. And when they're looking for files in these virtual directories, instead of trying to figure out what site collection they're in, they just go, I'm going to go to the root of the web app and I'm going to find this file. And there's some weird things you can get into, so always upgrade that database first so you have that slash site collection. Now, the obvious question from that is, what if I don't want to upgrade that slash site collection? What if that thing is horrible? It's got 400 links on the front page. It's ugly. We let the marketing folks in there with SharePoint Designer and all hell broke loose. There is no way we want to upgrade that thing. The simple solution is then on 2016, you just create a new one. There just has to be one there. So create a new one, have plans for it, and then do the rest of your updates or your upgrades. Unless you like spending a lot of quality time with your end users, if you like your IMs going off and your phone ringing and all that, try to use as many of the same URLs as you can. So users, as we know, they confuse and frighten easily, and so we want to minimize that as much as possible. So try to use the same URLs. Unless your URL is one of those sins of the past, then fix it. And then when you went from 2007 to 2010, you had visual upgrade, which made 2010 look like 2007. When you went from 2010 to 2013, you had this whole mode 14 thing that made 2013 look like 2010. All that's gone. When you upgrade, it all goes.
So go deep in on the Office Web Apps, which is now the Office Online Server On-Prem, USOP. Super cool stuff. This is something that I personally used back in the 2010, 2013 days. I had a machine that I had saved a big presentation. It was going up in front of a C-level executive, and my machine decided it was done. It just didn't want to play anymore, so it went and bye-bye. I was able to walk in, go to the Mac at the time that was there, and go, because there were Macs in the conference rooms, was able to go into the conference room, go pull up from SharePoint and go into the Office Web Apps and just do the presentation right from there. So big benefit to your users. If you don't have it in your environment, you do have it in your environment, just so you know. Office Online Server On-Prem is one of those things that gets installed by those Exchange people oftentimes, or even better, those Link and Skype people, okay? So Office Online Server is leveraged by all three technologies, Exchange, Skype for Business, and SharePoint. So most likely, if you haven't upgraded to 2016 yet, and you haven't upgraded to the Office Online Server On-Prem 2016 yet, somebody else in your organization already has. So go off and find that out before you go install yet another Office Online Server On-Prem farm, and check to see what's there, because you may be able to leverage the one that's already in existence. Okay. So hardware is the key. They must be on their own server, right? You cannot put it on their own server. The little mic drop there.
Thought it was
off.
My heart. I thought I was having an event right here on stage.
I've had enough of that lately, please. They have to put these on their own servers. They can't be installed in the same boxes with the SharePoint DLLs. Okay, the Office DLLs, they conflict. It won't let you. If you have Office Online Server On-Prem on there first, SharePoint won't go in. If you have SharePoint on there, Office Online Server On-Prem won't go in. They've done that and made it so it's nice and we don't have to worry about it. Now, the Office Online Server does require that you're using claims-based authentication, which you should be using anyway. Is there anybody who's not planning on using claims-based authentication in 2016? Good. Well, I'm sorry. We'll talk. We'll buy that man a drink. Yeah. claims is required. You do have to go off and do some bindings on the backside, especially if you're going to go down the BI route. There has to be some delegation in order to use some of the really cool functionality that's there. If you're using any of the Power Pivot on-prem stuff, you do have to do some delegation out to those servers in order for them to reach out to some of the back-end servers as well to eliminate the Kerberos double hop authentication issues. It does require volume license on the Office side in order to use the Office Online Server on-prem. And really, really good for SharePoint because we moved the Excel services off of the SharePoint boxes. I'm a big fan of this because SharePoint had started to get a little bit bloated. It's the me version of, SharePoint became the me version of all of this instead of the slim Todd version, since he's lost so much weight. So now 2016 is getting back to healthy and is offloading some of those things. I gained all the weight that you lost, by the way. So it's back.
It's all yours, big fella.
It's offloaded all of those things that it's not, you know, weren't core to what they were doing and that we were doing in other places. Right, so Office Online Server on-prem is the place that we were already doing Excel calculations. Users were doing lots of stuff there, working in it already. Why not leverage that? It's a totally different farm topology as well. It's not a tiered topology, it's a scaled topology. So you can add servers horizontally instead of having to go vertically and scale your Office Online Server on-prem because you're not dealing in databases. It's all being done in the IIS layer.
Yeah. And even if you're not doing the BI stuff, there's some really great functionality that the Office Online Server adds. It adds this ability inside of search to get document previews. So before the Office web apps were a thing, I had this really great workflow where I would go into SharePoint and I would do a search for a document, and I would click the top result, and my machine would whir, and Word would pop up, and it would be the wrong one, and I would close Word, and I would click the next one, and my machine would whir, and Word would pop up, and it would be the wrong one, and I would click close. And this was a lot of fun. Everybody enjoyed it. But now with the Office web apps, you can do things like hover over documents, and there will be a pop-up preview of the document, Word documents, PowerPoint documents, things like that. You can do it in the document libraries themselves now. You can hover over that. So again, you need claims. Jason talked about how you can spread it out, the farms, the wide. It's a great technology. I'm a big fan. We promised to talk about claims. We're going to talk about claims. Now, this was a bigger deal going from 2010 to 2013 because while claims existed in 2010, it was kind of sad, kind of pathetic, and we laughed at people that used claims in 2010. Putting claims in SharePoint 2010 was Microsoft's insidious way of having us beta test claims for them without telling us that was what we were doing. In 2013, though, claims was good. It had matured. It was just kind of the way to do it. And in 2016, same deal. Anything like the Office web apps that is not on the SharePoint server, Office web apps, workflow manager, BI, anything like that that your users want to use, you have to have claims because of this double hop thing that we've alluded to. So you got to use claims if you're going to do any of that kind of stuff. This is another one of those things where there's two schools of thought on this. If you're going from 2010, you're probably using Classic, so you need to convert to claims. And so there's two ways you can do that. You can convert Classic to claims on 2010, and then when you can upgrade from 2010 to 2013 or 2016, you're already claims, you're golden. Or you can leave 2010 alone, bring it into 2013 or 2016 as Classic, and then upgrade it to claims in the new environment. Again, this is one of those things where each environment's different. There's schools of thought for either one. Personally, I like to do the second one. I like to leave it as Classic, bring it into 2013 or 2016 as Classic, and convert it to claims there. My rationale for that is, what is another name for your 2010 farm? Production. So, if you are in 2010 or 2013 and using Classic, and you decide to go the first route, and you convert it in production, and things go haywire, on the bad-o-meter, where is that? It's pretty bad. If you decide to leave it as Classic and convert it in your new environment, you're going to do that during the testing phase. Or the very worst case scenario, when you do your cutover on Friday night or whatever, you're going to do it then. And if it bombs there, you just don't go. You stay with production. So maybe that's just because I screw up a lot of upgrades when I do them. Maybe that's why I go that route. The argument for the other way is when you upgrade, one of the keys that I always, one of my words of advice, my phrase of advice is don't upgrade crap. And there are just so many ways where that's good advice, don't upgrade crap. And so when people talk about converting on the old system from Classic to claims, that's what they're doing. They're saying, when I bring this content database into 2016, I want it to already be claims. I don't want it to be crap. So again, that's your own environment. You can make that decision. The other reason that I like to do it in the end environment is because the tools to convert in 2013 and 2016 are better than in 2010. So it's the same underpinnings, it's just better commandlets and all that.
So
When you do the conversion from Classic to Claims, two things happen. And this is important because it's important to understand how this works if you have multiple databases. The first thing that happens when you do convert SP Web App and convert it to Claims, SharePoint goes into IIS and says, IIS, we're doing a new thing here with authentication. Because IIS does authentication. Are you who you say you are? SharePoint does authorization. I believe you are who you say you are, but do you have access to the thing you're trying to get to? So when IIS does authentication, we need to flip that switch from Classic to Claims. The second thing that happens is SharePoint then goes through the content database and finds all of the old Classic usernames and converts them to Claims usernames. Goes through, okay. It's important to know because then the question becomes, if I have multiple databases and I do the convert at the end, when do I convert my web app? Do I convert it once all the databases are over there? Do I convert it when one of the databases is over there? When I do it, I convert it when the first database comes over so I can test things immediately. And then as I bring databases over, I run it each time I run a bring a database. And what happens when you run that is it tries to do the first step. It says, hey, IIS, I got this new thing. I got this thing called claims. And IIS is like, been there, done that. I'm already claims. Get out of here. And then it goes on to the second step and does the find with replace inside your content database.
So I was a claims hater for a long time. And the reason why was because I was one of the people who was responsible for a lot of the documentation that Microsoft did on claims back in 2010, because I was a customer of claims in 2010 at the beginning.
One of the beta testers.
Yes,
I was telling you about.
In production, we were. You know, it was a horrible, horrible experience. It was kind of when I met you, because I used to scream and scream and scream, and they kind of wondered why I was screaming about claims because nobody else was doing it. So personally, when I do this, I want to do it in 2016 because that was hell in 2010. It was not a lot of fun dealing with claims in 2010. Do it where it's good. Because at this point, you know, when Todd put it on here, I actually read it as claims is dormant the first time because it's just the thing that just is there. You don't even think about it. Claims is the way and the light now. So when I first read it, it didn't read it as dominant because I wasn't wearing my glasses. I looked at it, I was like, why
two or three brandies in at this point.
I was like, why are you calling it dormant? I'm just wondering. I'm with you. I kind of got there. But so it's just the way you do it now. So 2016 is, for me, the place to do it. The other thing to start thinking about is the Azure AD world, okay? Because as you're starting to get there, in order to do any of the cool hybrid stuff that we've talked about so far, you're going to have to be syncing at least with Azure AD, okay? So as you're starting to move into the on-prem world of 2016, start to think about it, because they're pushing all of these really cool hybrid experiences down at you. So as you're looking at the authentication, start to understand Azure AD. It's a really good thing, guys. It's really, there's a lot of great stuff that comes with that federation world. You know, going down the ADFS route, good way to go. You can also just simply go with syncing through Azure AD Connect. Depends upon how mature you are in that process. If you just want to start to play around, you know, very simply, you can go down the Azure AD Connect route.
Yep.
Let's see, we have a clicker.
Get the thing with the thing. So we've talked a little bit about it. Here's what it looks like on the 2016 or 2013 end. So when you create a new web app, you can create a classic one, and that's how you do it. And if you need to know which web apps in your farm are classic or claims, you can use that second PowerShell line there that will give you the URLs and if they're using classic or not. And then the bottom is how you do the conversion. So, and you have the opportunity there to use the force.
I always use the force.
It's just fun
Jedi.
To say.
Jedi.
Yeah. But, yeah. And you can run that as many times as you want. It's like voting. Run it early. Run it often. So we've kind of glossed over this, features and solutions. Your solutions, the WSP files, are stored in the ConfigDB, which is one of those things that you can't upgrade. And those solutions house all of the features, which are the things that your content databases make reference to. So you need to figure out your approach for that. Part of this whole getting rid of the sins of the past and not upgrading crap is looking at the solutions and features you're using today and deciding, number one, is this something I even need to upgrade? Is it something that I'm using? Is it something that I downloaded off the internet in a bout of insomnia and installed but really don't like? And if so, uninstall it, get rid of it. Also a good time to look at the things that you do need and say, are there newer versions of this? I downloaded Crazy Larry's fancy SharePoint widget 5 years ago? Does Crazy Larry have a new version of it? Do I want to get that one? If you have in-house developers, now's a good time to have them look at the framework or the add-in models or any of these other new development topics that have come in. But now's a good time to reevaluate that. On the flip side, the 2010 and 2013 WSPs, for the most part, just work. Gonna wanna test it, gonna wanna install them in your 2016 farm and test the functionality, but chances are they probably just work. If you don't have those WSP folders or files, Shane's got a blog post there that walks you through some PowerShell. For me personally, when I install a SharePoint server, all of my SharePoint servers have a D drive, and that's where my logs go and all that kind of stuff. They also all have an install folder, and I install everything from there. Certificates, WSPs, all that kind of stuff, and it's just one of the things that I back up.
So we talked a little bit about this. You know, we talked about test, and we didn't mention mount yet because we wanted to stress the test piece in, piece of it. So test SP content database, we've already talked through that. Mount SP content database, once you're done with the test, literally you can go arrow up, home button, delete, 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 type word mount, hit enter. Nice and simple. Todd had to tell me that one when we were going through all this because I just would have retyped it and used tab complete, but he cheats. So
lazy.
Just one after another. The thing that you want to do before you get to that point, though, and we recommend this always when you open a PowerShell window. Personally, I use profiles. You can go out to my GitHub repo. It's github.com/Jason Himmelstein. I have PowerShell profiles out there. Start-transcript. Anybody heard about start-transcript?
Next slide.
Here's how you start that.
Now you've heard about start-transcript.
This puts a log file for you at the location that it's saying here, okay? And it will log everything you're doing in that PowerShell window. You want this log, okay? Now, here's a caveat. If you're using PowerShell ISE, first of all, you don't want to be running PowerShell through PowerShell ISE. That's where we write. We save, and then we go into PowerShell and run, okay? Because start-transcript does not work in the newer versions of PowerShell ISE.
I think it does now. I think starting in 4 or 5 it does. It didn't
in
old ones.
It's got to be 5 because it didn't in 4. Yeah. I haven't tested it recently.
I'm with you, though. Don't run the ISE, but I think they've added
that. Make sure you do start transcript.
So there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one is you're doing this. It's going to provide you some good documentation. Number two, we're going to show in a second the log that comes up. You're going to want to get to the top of that. One caveat or one thing to keep in mind when you're doing start transcript is anything that you type on the screen or SharePoint PowerShell gives you back will show up in that log. So if you do anything with passwords and they show up on the screen, you're going to want to clear those out before you get done. It's just a text file, so you can do that.
So here we go. We've typed our handy-dandy test-SP content database.
That is actually the name of the database, by the way.
Yes. So. And here we are. We get test SP content database. Everything comes back. We have a couple things that are missing. And as you take a look through it, I don't know here as I move my myself around. Here we have some references. Let's go ahead and use that feature. How about that? Boom. Well, I told you I'm a BI guy, so of course I had the PowerView integration turned on here. So it's just alerting me to that. As I take a look down a little bit further, I also have Power Pivot features installed in the farm. So it's giving me a warning. Is it blocking, Todd?
No. So let's scroll up a little bit, and let's talk about this a little bit. All right, so everything in PowerShell is an object. And we're not going to get into what an object is, but everything is an object. And so this upgrade issues object has a bunch of properties. And so the category is missing feature. We're going to cover what's important about that in a minute. Whether it's an error or a warning is in there. Like Jason just mentioned, is it upgrade blocking? True or false? This is an important one. Well, you need to research, you need to plan, you need to test, all that kind of stuff. I will tell you 9 times out of 10 when I do a SharePoint upgrade, I do test SP content database, and if there's no blocking upgrades, up arrow mount. I just let her have it. But that blocking thing, that will block the entire database from upgrading. So then the message, the remedy is good. If you read through that, it will tell you that. And so again, look through those. So head on to the next. So this is important. We told you how important the transcript was. It just wasn't because we wanted to show you how smart we were and that we knew about the transcript. The problem is when you look at this log, if it ends up going for a bit, the things at the bottom are things like missing web parts, missing files, stuff like that. And it's easy to get wrapped around looking at things in the file system. You're like, oh, it says I'm missing 14 program files, common files, blah, blah. I'll just drag that over. And you fix that one error. What you need to do, and you can do it not because of the transcript, is you need to go to the very top of that test and start from the top and work down. Don't work from the bottom up. Because we're missing a web part. It's an Excel web part. What are the chances that if we look at that top error and install that feature, that BI feature that it's missing, it's going to fix this missing file, this missing web part? Pretty good. So the transcript becomes important because if the output from this becomes more than 300 lines, you know, your buffer in PowerShell, you don't have a chance to go back up and get that. So that's the transcript.
The other side of it is hopefully you're doing this in a testing world first. So what do? Well, you have your log. That becomes your playbook for going into production. Right? So we have our documentation. You don't have to go taking screenshots like I did here. You just go back to the log, you copy what you need, boom, I'm done. I have all of my PowerShell that I ran, I changed my database names, and I can copy and paste in to PowerShell and move it right along.
Yeah, and since this was a test, so we got this, and Jason's like, oh, that BI stuff, I forgot to install that BI stuff. So he's in 2016 in his test environment, he installs the BI bits, he hits up arrow and runs the test again. And then we see what went away, and then we hit the next one at the top and start working our way down. It's a good environment.
All right. So because there's nothing blocking in this particular situation, we just said, let's let it fly. So we did up arrow, and I even capitalized the letter M in this one. Todd was very impressed because I wanted to make the slides proper.
Only the best for you folks. We did the little tearing at the bottom and Snagit, only the best.
Yes, thank you, Snagit. So, TechSmith, excuse me. So as we did it, it tells us, go check out the CULS logs. To go take a look at what's going on with the upgrade process, and that tells me that there were 5 sites that got, you know, that were a part of this. That was it. This how long did this take?
Just a few minutes. It wasn't too bad. The thing that always cracks me up is, so I've been doing SharePoint upgrades for like 10 years now, from 2001 to 2003. In like the 2003 days, when you do a mount database and upgrade it, it would just churn at you, and the cursor would flash. And nothing would happen. And then sometime, minutes, hours, days, weeks later, it would just return the prompt. And that's how you knew your database was upgraded. And that was something that we always yelled at Microsoft about, because you never knew. Was something hanging on the back end? Was it just crashed? You could never tell. So starting in SharePoint 2010, when they introduced these PowerShell commandlets, they went from no progress whatsoever to the hundredths of a percent. That's how precise we have it now, to the hundredth of a percent.
Yes, and you get to about 33.47%, and it hangs there for about 5 minutes, and then it jumps right to 100%, which is personally better than going for on a V2V upgrade, which it gives you 113%.
Has anybody ever gotten that, when it gets past that? That's SharePoint given 113%. Yeah. I love that.
Excited you're almost done, and nah. So. All right, so some things are the same. So the commands that we just ran.
All versions of SharePoint, 2010, 2013, 2016.
So there's one log per upgrade. There's one error log per upgrade as well, which is a lot of fun.
Have you seen that? Is that awesome or what? So when you do your upgrade, you get this big, bloated, nasty log file that is like every thought SharePoint had during the entire upgrade process. I mean, it is thousands of lines long. And then it's got the bad news file, which is that same file that's just dot error. And it's just all the stuff that exploded. So if you're like me and you just want to dig right in, dot error, if you're, you know, you need, but I love that there's one file that's nothing but bad news. So you can just get in and fix it.
So you always read the bad news first, right?
Always,
it's the last page of the book.
Yep.
So we're still mounting multiple databases at the same time. That's not a problem. And the look and feel are upgraded to 2016 automatically. Now.
Yeah. Oh, so I want to talk about the multiple databases thing for a minute. So what that means is we can have multiple PowerShell windows on a SharePoint server running multiple mount commands at the same time. We can also have multiple mount commands running on separate SharePoint servers at the same time. So this is good if you've got a lot of stuff to bring over. Where do you think the bottleneck is for this? SQL, okay. Now for extra credit, where on SQL? Disk, I.O., exactly, right. So it's not enough that you can run multiples at a time. You got to pay attention to it. So this is one of those things in your test environment. One of the things we haven't mentioned much, and we don't really have a lot of time to, is making sure the web page comes up in 2016 isn't enough. It feels like enough. You get this big when it comes up. But performance is also a piece that you need to look at. And so when you're doing things like your upgrades and all that, watch SQL, watch the I/O, and that will let you know whether you can run multiple mount commands at a time, and then it'll let you know whether your pages are gonna, you know, render quickly enough.
So one quick thing about that, because I've been harping on SQL. For those of you who've done it correctly and you've split your temp DB by the number of cores that you have, so zero is one, so if you have four, you split it and you have the number three when you're setting all of that up, go take a look at it, and if you've moved your temp DB and temp logs to different disks, what you can look at is take a look at the individual disks, because you could potentially have four upgrades going at one time into four different processes of SQL, going through four different cores. So one of the things to take a look at, exactly that, taking a look and understanding the core process as well as the log files, because everything's pumping through temp. That's where it's hitting first, not just on the back end where your actual database files are going into. So.
Yep. All right. So this is kind of our cheat sheet. And again, these slides are going to be available so you can get this out. But this is kind of the cheat sheet. Upgrade your service apps first. On your source environment when you're going live, make them read-only in your source environment. Then detach them from your old farm, but do not delete them. You never know when the upgrade gremlins are going to make a guest appearance and you need to roll back. Back them up in SQL. Restore them to your new SQL instance. Fix the permissions. Good SharePoint admins use different service accounts for every SharePoint farm. So in theory, when you restore those databases to your SharePoint 2016 SQL instance, those service accounts aren't going to have any permission because it's not the same service accounts you used in your old version. Long story with that, but you guys are really eager to get that conference lunch. I can see you guys, so we won't tell you the story. Since you made them read-only before you backed them up, you need to make them writable in SQL and then attach them. We don't have a lot of time to talk about this. One of the, you know, the upgrade's little brother is patching, build to build. The thing that we've been talking about is V to V, or version to version. B to B is patching. That's those monthly little gifts that Microsoft sends down to us. In 2016, they have made tremendous improvements on that. The horror stories of the past, patching SharePoint aren't as bad now. So we've got smaller patches. They install more quickly. Unless you're the September patch, then you install much more slowly. We've got feature packs they talked about yesterday. This will add functionality to SharePoint 2016. If you haven't seen zero downtime patching, ZDP to our American friends, ZDP to our Canadian friends, this is a way to patch your SharePoint farm with no end user downtime. There's some magic there. That's a great TechNet video on it. Walks you through the process. There's some great PowerShell scripts you can steal, and they show the whole thing.
So there's this really great blog out there.
It is one of the best.
You got to check it
out.
Tell
us about this blog.
Yeah, so before I knew who the Todd Clint was, and who before I worked with him, I used his blog regularly for this. So if you haven't gone out, go ahead and take a look at his builds pages. He has them for 2010, 2013, and 2016. Not only are they there, but the community likes to feed in and yell a lot. And they yell at Todd rather than yelling at me, which is a lot of fun for me. So there's also a regressions and bugs page in there for each of those. So when he actually keeps it up to date, which he does a decent job with, all of that information is there. So if you're looking at a CU, you can go ahead and take a look. If you're looking at older versions and you're looking at SPs, take a look and understand which things to go off and download and why, what was there. All of that stuff is in his blog there. At, you know, for the 2016 version, it's SP 2016 builds off it.
So one of the things that's very sad for me is I get a lot of traffic for that. In 2016, it came out in May, there have been, what, four CUs? Of course, they don't call them CUs anymore, they're patches. You know how many regressions there have been in SharePoint 2016 patches since launch? Zero. No regressions. No SharePoint 2016 patch has broken anything yet. I'm just saying forever's a long time. It's just zero. And then, so also, I've got the blog post, and then I've got a Twitter account for that. If you don't want to follow all of my crap, you can follow just that one.
So here's the last little bit for you. So you can find Todd's blog at toddsname.com/blog. It's spelled with two D's, just in case you were wondering.
And a D in the last name for good measure.
And mine is at sharepointlonghorn.com. I blog much less frequently than Todd does. The video that Shane created, and thank you to Shane for that, is there listed on the screen for you as well. It's a Yep. About 21 minutes. That's why we didn't have time to fit it in. With all of his stories and everything, we never would have been getting you guys to lunch.
And I'll tweet that out so you can click it and not have to type it.
So please, last thing for you, come visit us at our other session on Thursday. There's all the information. And there is a review that you guys can do of this.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, please go out and do that because that's
kind.
How we get to come back. So thank you guys very much.
Thanks. Enjoy your conference lunch.
I'll leave this one up on the screen.
We had 9.